Chapter 40. Paz Pays. Paz Pays. P-E-I-S-E. Weight, a poise, a burden, a load, to poise or weigh. Middle English, pas, from Old North French, from Latin, pensum, consideration, importance, weight. Fucking hell, she sweet curses, almost a shriek, and leaps for the top of a protruding boulder. What the fuck is this stuff? Not quite as maneuverable with an unconscious Kakashi in his arms, Kurama stays where he is, but flares his chakra. It burns through the thick white ooze that's spreading out across the cavern, and the smell that rises is almost enough to make him gag, somewhere between decaying flesh and rotting plant matter. The white Zetsu clones that were trapped in the Gato Mazo, he realizes with a grimace. Infinite Tsukiyomi's previous victims, their stasis shattered along with the statue. And Kurama wants to feel pity or relief for them, but all he has space for right now is a tension-tight knot of worry filling his chest to the brim. Ichor, is all he says, and it's true enough, if not entirely correct. Sakura had told Naruto once that Ichor was the blood of the gods, and Kurama can't think of a better description for this mess. Not Kaguya's blood directly, but the blood of her twisted plans. Gone now, and not a moment too soon, honestly. Perched atop a pillar of wood, Tenzo makes a face, though his eyes are flickering over the rest of the cave, scanning for any sign of movement. I feel like we should take advantage of this brief opportunity to run. That's the best advice Kurama's heard in a long time. Make an exit, he orders. And when Shisui blinks at him, he glares at the kid. Or I can do it and bring the rest of the cave down on our heads. The two jonin exchange glances for half a second, before Tenzo gives a determined nod. Right, he says, bringing his hands together in a snake seal, and the post he's standing on rises, even as earth rumbles and shifts above him. Is the captain gonna bleed to death before we can stop again? Shisui asks, leaping lightly into the cleared space around Kurama. One eye is trained on the space where they last saw their opponents, half a second before the explosion. And Kurama can't blame him for his caution. He's got every sense straining trying to find Obito at the very least. But there's nothing. Kamui, probably, he thinks in disgust. Unfortunately, there are more pressing things to worry about. Kakashi, for one. And Kurama has been trying not to think about the sheer volume of blood dripping hot and wet down his arm. Let's hurry instead of waiting around to find out. He bites out, getting an arm under Kakashi's knees and leaping for Tenzo's pillar. A touch of chakra gives him traction on the vertical surface, and he follows it up towards the slant of sunlight where Tenzo is pushing through to the outside world. At the very edge of the hole, his feet finally on solid ground, Kurama turns. Positive and negative chakra swirl together in his palm one more time. Probably overkill, but even with the Jubi's husk shattered to pieces, he's not taking any chances. Go, he snarls at Shisui and Tenzo, and hurls the full-sized Bijudama back the way they came. With a groaning rumble, the entire side of the mountain starts to cave in. Taking three long leaps towards the edge of the tree line, Kurama pauses for just a moment, looking back. It's with vicious satisfaction that he watches as the Jubi's vessel, Kaguya's vessel, is buried beneath several hundred tons of rock and earth. If the goddess goes looking for a way back to Earth, She's sure as hell not gonna find one there. And maybe that's not a guarantee that she never will, because she's damn creative and Zetsu is definitely not dead yet. But it's the best guarantee that Kurama can put on things. However things play out now, they're not going to end the way they did the first time around. Kurama-sama! A familiar voice calls, and with relief, Kurama turns to see a silvery shape wriggle out from the undergrowth. Right behind Momiji comes another fox, even larger than he is, but solid black except for the white tips on her seven tails. Momiji, Kurama says, crouching down, and buries his free hand in the Reynard's thick ruff. There you are. I thought you'd gotten caught or something. Momiji huffs, ears pressing flat against his skull in offense. Never, Kurama-sama, but I found Ran. Was she missing? Kurama asks with faint amusement, nodding to the vixen. She bounces a little in place, ears up and tails fanned out, and gives him a happy fox grin. I don't go back to Mount Inari very often, she says, and her voice is incongruously light for her massive size. As big as a bear and much broader across the chest proportionally than either Momiji or Fuji. I'm sure he thought I was lost. It's very nice to meet you at last, Kurama-sama. Momiji has told me so much about you. Not to interrupt this charming little meet and greet, Shisui cuts in, but is the horizon supposed to be on fire? Kurama jerks his head up, twisting around as best as he can without jostling Kakashi, and curses. The southern edge of the forest is burning, right next to where Roshi and Han were supposed to stage their distraction. Sage, I think Roshi lost his temper. We need to get over there. We can take you, Ran volunteers. And when Kurama glances at her in surprise, she shyly ducks her head, but offers, I'd be happy to help, Kurama-sama. Those people in the big den have always felt bad. I'm glad you're getting rid of them. To anyone sensitive to natural chakra, bad is probably an understatement. With Kakashi bleeding out in his arms, Kurama's not about to argue, so he nods and pushes to his feet. I need bandages, he tells the other two shinobi. Any you can spare, unless one of you is hiding a talent for medical ninjutsu? Instantly, they both reach for their pouches. Jiraiya-sama might know some. Tenzo offers, mouth pulled tight as he watches Kurama lay Kakashi out on the ground. Shisui has his back to them, keeping watch on the approach, but the line of his shoulders is tense and worried. Given the fact that Kakashi isn't stirring, even as Kurama peels shredded, blood-soaked cloth away from his flayed back, they're right to worry. Samaihara is a vicious sword, shaving skin off more than cutting it. And between that, its chakra drain and Kakashi's use of the Sharingan, the Kapinin is looking paler than his hair. He doesn't make so much as a sound when Kurama presses a wad of cloth against the long, wide strip of skinned flesh, trying not to hurt him, but also trying to stop the bleeding. Shisui makes a short, sharp sound in his throat. Someone reported hearing that Tsunade-sama was seen near the Lightning Country border, he suggests. I know she can't stand blood, but... But flaying is a slow, painful form of execution, and Kakashi's back is currently missing half its skin. There's no way that Kurama knows of fixing that with low-level medical ninjutsu. They need a medic nin, at the very least, and Lightning Country's border is a hell of a lot closer than dragging themselves all the way back to Water Country. But... Naruto and the rest of the kids are in Kiri, on their own... And while Kurama trusts that Zabuza will do everything he can to keep them safe, against someone like Obito, that isn't a hell of a lot of help. Even Kisame might be too much for the swordsman to handle right now. Kurama would be more than happy to just bolt back to them as fast as possible and get rid of that risk entirely. Kakashi took that blow for him, though. Kakashi pushed him out of the way, as stupid and foolish as the gesture was, and Kurama isn't about to let him die for it. Naruto taught him better than that. Help me get him up, he tells Tenzo, instead of answering, and the teenager slides over to lift Kakashi's torso carefully, letting Kurama wrap more bandages around his chest to hold the makeshift pad in place. Movement, Shisui reports sharply, And Ran rises to her feet with a high, snarling growl, moving to stand next to him. Shisui flinches a little. She's eye level with him, massive and intimidating. And given the last time Konoha faced a giant fox, Kurama can't quite blame him, but doesn't move away, simply reaching for a coil of ninja wire. It's Han who emerges from the trees, though, supporting a limping, cursing Jiraiya, who has a hand on the Jinchuriki's shoulders. Roshi is right behind him, looking incredibly unhappy and with half of his beard charred off. And Itachi is bringing up the rear, his face streaked with soot but looking otherwise untouched. "Itachi!" Shisui says with clear relief, leaping forward to meet his cousin. "You're okay?" Solemn, Itachi nods, dark eyes flickering over the older jonin. "I'm fine. Were you hurt? We saw the explosion." "Not my fault," Shisui protests, as though his pride has been wounded by the mere implication. "Talk about the trigger-happy twosome over there." A sharply indrawn breath says that Jiraiya, at least, has noticed Kakashi's state. The toad sage hobbles over, clearly favoring one knee, and crouches down with a wince to check Kakashi's pulse. "Damn, kid, he's not looking so hot." There's a faint huff of breath and a tightly contained groan. "I'm always hot," Kakashi protests vaguely, not even opening his eyes. Kurama rolls his eyes, even as relief bubbles up in his chest. "Yeah, yeah," he says, making it as patronizing as possible. "Shut your damn mouth, Hatake. I don't know what the hell you were thinking. That was just about the stupidest thing I've ever seen someone do, and that's saying something." Kakashi opens his gray eye, peering up at Kurama as he secures the bandage over Kakashi's ribs, and says with perfect mildness, "Automatic reflex. Cave-ins do that to me." Fuck. Kurama hadn't thought of that, hadn't paid attention to the parallels. Sage, damn it, he's acting as dumb as Naruto right now. But even Naruto wouldn't ignore a blaring signal like that. He takes a breath, pretending it doesn't shake a little, and growls, "And now you're missing a third of your skin," he snaps, but keeps his motions gentle as he slides a finger beneath the wraps to make sure they aren't too tight. "I could have healed myself, Hatake." "I realize that." It would be lazy if not for the edge beneath the words, or the way Kakashi's fingers curl around his wrist, white-knuckled for half an instant before he controls the tell and pushes to his feet. One sideways glance, and he adds without inflection, "Now." It takes effort not to curse aloud as Kurama follows him up, but he manages to trap the words behind his teeth, and turns to Jiraiya. "The rest of the Akatsuki?" "Kakuzu is out of hearts again," Roshi offers with a pleased grunt, folding his arms over his chest. "Slippery bastard staged a retreat before I could torch him, though." "Yes," Han says dryly, offering Jiraiya a hand back to his feet. "We noticed that you missed. The massive wildfire was rather conspicuous." "Partly my fault," Itachi puts in. And when Shisui opens his mouth, he narrows his eyes in obvious warning. "Orochimaru confronted us, and we nearly managed to capture him. But Sasori arrived with his puppets, and we had to retreat." Han hums, sounding unhappy. "B's close," he reports. "Kakuo can feel him, but I don't think we can afford to face a united Akatsuki." Well, if their goal was taking out Akatsuki, they failed miserably. Thankfully, Kurama thinks, with some amusement, their bar for success was set a lot lower. Now that the Gedo Mazo has been thoroughly shattered, Akatsuki is without any way of sealing the Bijuu. Madara's grand plan is completely upended, and Obito's as well. They're ineffectual now, aimless, and once things are a little more settled, Kurama will be overjoyed to pick them off one at a time without the threat of sealing. Taking a breath, Kurama drags his thoughts back to the matter at hand. Akatsuki is, at the moment, still a threat. Obito's probably regrouping right now, but he's not going to take the loss of the Gedo Mazo well. B is close enough for Kakuo to sense Gyuki, and likely Nagato still has him wrapped up with chakra rods. They're short on time, a little battered, and need to get Kakashi help before he bleeds to death. This isn't the time for a confrontation, but maybe... Shisui? Kurama says, and the Uchiha twists away from where he's checking Itachi over and looks at him questioningly. Kurama gives him a smile that might have a few too many teeth to be polite, and asks, how are you at hit-and-run attacks? Shisui's eyes widen, then narrow sharply. Very good, he says, grinning back, and looks dangerous. We are going after the Raikage's brother? Might as well, Kurama agrees, since we came all this way. I'll take you, Ran volunteers eagerly, then pauses, her ears folding back in embarrassment. Ah, if you don't mind, Kurama-sama. Kurama huffs a brief laugh, scratching behind one of her ears. Thanks, he says, and lets her dart a quick, shy lick at his wrist without pulling away. Come on, Uchiha, we've got a Jinchuriki to rescue. Shisui grimaces, but gamely follows Kurama as he twists his fingers in Ran's ruff and swings onto her back. Thank you, he tells her awkwardly, and Kurama rolls his eyes, grabs the teenager by the back of his flak jacket, and pulls him up as well. Relax, he orders. She might be black, but Ran's a Myobu, not a Nogitsune. You're as safe with her as you are with any Kitsune. There's a difference? Shisui asks, and then yelps as Momiji huffs and snaps his teeth at his bare toes. Hey, that's really not helping with the relaxing thing. Nogitsune are field foxes, Momiji informs him pointedly. Wild fox spirits not sworn to a service. They're more dangerous. Myobu are celestial fox spirits, like summons, with a purpose and a figure to serve. Itachi, at Shisui's knee, makes a quiet sound of interest. The Kyuubi was a Nogitsune, then? He asks. Momiji gives a yipping, delighted laugh, and Ran chuckles, amused. No, she says. Not in the least. Kyuubi-sama has 9 tails. He's our god as much as any other. He's neither, because he's greater than either title can encompass. Okay, folklore lesson is over, Kurama says hastily, giving Momiji a sharp look. The Reynard grins back at him, showing a flash of tongue, before he snaps his teeth and sits down, wrapping his tails around himself. You'll start heading back? As best we can, Jiraiya agrees with a faint grimace, testing his leg. Han snorts quietly, but meets Kurama's eyes squarely. We'll be fine, he assures him. And if we're not, we'll inform you immediately. Go save B. We'll meet you back by the ship. Ao should still be waiting. Kurama can't help a quick glance at Kakashi, who's still standing, even if he does look like he really shouldn't be. Reading the question Kurama can't quite bring himself to ask, Kakashi crinkles his eye in a bullshit smile, even as he pulls his hatayate back down. Ma, Kurama, you should go. We have a conversation to get to later. Well, that's a cheerful thought to leave on. Kurama makes a face at him, orders, hang on, though he can't tell if it's for Shisui's sake or Kakashi's, and curls his fingers into Ran's dark fur. The vixen immediately gathers herself, and in a surge of sleek muscle and long legs, she leaps forward, heading south. Can you smell them? Kurama asks, even as he stretches out his senses. Nagato isn't angry as much as he is driven, but there's a deeply buried thread of it in him that's just about as heady as Obito's. Ran yips in confirmation, launching herself over a river to the sound of Shisui's yelp. Kurama has to swallow a chuckle. Despite the tension Kakashi's comment left him with, he wonders how long it will take for Shisui to realize she's only exaggerating her bounds and jumps to get a reaction out of him. A Myobu is still a Kitsune, after all. They're approaching slowly, but I can find them, she says. It's the one with all the metal. I've seen him before. These are my woods, and I've been watching for a long time. With 7 tails, she has to have been, A few more centuries and enough power, and Thran has every chance of reaching Nine Tails. Not many foxes do. And if she's staked out Moon Country as her own, it means she's on her way to becoming a god in her own right. Good, Kurama says gruffly, and pretends he doesn't see the way her ears prick up with joy and excitement. A lot of darkness has settled here. I'm glad that someone as strong as you is keeping an eye on it. Kurama-sama! Ran's next jump has an added wriggle of delight. Thank you! Why the sama? Shisui complains, clutching at the back of Kurama's shirt as they skirt a stand of burning trees and clear a wide fallen log. And no more wiggling, please. Ran grins, chattering gutturally in her amusement. Kurama-sama is Kurama-sama, she says cheerfully. And Kurama can't fight his own grin. Of course foxes would understand trickery and keeping secrets. Then her ears swivel, and she twists around, skidding to a halt at the top of a small rise. They're down there. 9 of them, Kurama-sama. This close, Kurama doesn't need to stretch to feel Nagato's anger. Konan is pretty much invisible to him. She has devotion, not malice, at her core. But he doesn't need that particular ability to hear the mechanical thud of Nagato's walker, or to feel the edge of Gyuki's chakra, fainter than it should be. We're going to have to run, he warns Ran and Shisui equally. I'll distract them, you flash in and grab B, then Ran picks us up and we hightail it for the coast. If they're still chasing us by then, we'll keep going to Frost Country and try to make that connection to cross back to Kiri. Pain's range isn't all that great, though, so it shouldn't come to that. Great! So, 6 down. That only leaves us with the rest to worry about chasing us, Shisui retorts. But he takes a breath, slides off Ran's back, and leaps into the trees. The fire has filled the air with smoke, enough for decent cover. And in an instant, Shisui's concealed enough that Kurama has a hard time picking him out, even when he knows where to look. Kurama only hopes this goes better than the last I'll distract them plan. Really, though, he's got the easy part. Taking a breath, Kurama lets his chakra go, lets it flare out in a heavy, choking shroud, and feels Gyuki stir weakly. Nagato pauses, the sound of his walker disappearing between one beat and the next, and Kurama grins, full of enough teeth to make Zabuza proud. He hurls himself forward headlong, already calling up a surge of chakra. Not a Bijudama, not yet, though he's more than happy to take out one of the paths if there's an opportunity. Wind instead this time. Knife-sharp blades of it wrapped up in a hurricane, and he snarls viciously as he bursts through the trees, right on top of the group. Konan shouts warning, leaping in front of Nagato's walker, even as the 6 paths shift forward to form a defense. Kurama doesn't even hesitate. He drops his death wind on them instantly, and it screams as it tears through the trees and rips furrows in the earth. The hidden blades hit second, even as the Akatsuki members are still trying to find their footing. And it's sheer luck that the Naraka path takes the hardest hit. He stumbles back, faltering as deep rents slice into his robes and the dead flesh beneath, and the other paths move as one to defend. Konan and Nagato are falling back, and that's where B is, sprawled completely still across the walker. But Kurama doesn't let himself look. He meets the Deva path's wave of gravity with a shockwave of his own, sweeps beneath an attempt to grab him by the Asura path's metal arms, and kicks the animal path into the human path before summoning a wave of carefully controlled fire. Even as the Preta path moves to block it, there's a flash of green chakra. Too fast to see, Shisui flashes through the battleground, snatching B practically out of Nagato's lap, and vanishes back into the trees. That's Kurama's cue to leave before the paths manage to outmaneuver him. He drops beneath another of the Asura path's weapons and slams a shockwave into the ground, buckling and shaking the earth and rising a cloud of dust, and then leaps up and away. A burst of chakra gives him speed and momentum as he throws himself back the way he came, branches blurring beneath his feet. Roshi's fire is closing in, near enough that Kurama can feel the heat of it in the air, and the smoke is even thicker than the dust he raised. Through it, a dark shape looms. With a quick bound, Ran leaps past him, and Kurama doesn't wait for her to stop. He grabs the hand Shisui stretches out, jumps, and lets the Uchiha pull him up behind him. B is slumped in front, bowed over Ran's back, and Kurama had forgotten just what a big man he was. The largest of the Jinchuriki after Han. Hopefully carrying him won't tax Ran too heavily. "Well, that didn't go as badly as it could have," Shisui says, sounding cheerful again as they skid down a rocky slope and race towards the horizon. "Yay, team!" Kurama snorts, trying not to inhale too much smoke as he catches his breath. "Yay," he agrees dryly. "Can you get any of those chakra rods out of him?" He halfway expects Shisui to blanch or complain. Instead, the boy nods once, grimly, and asks, "He won't bleed to death from pulling them out?" Kurama tests Gyuki's power, and while it's diminished, it's more than enough to keep his host alive. "He's a Jinchuriki, remember? He'll be better once they're gone." There's no response beyond a soft grunt of effort and a sick sucking sound. But a moment later, one of the black rods goes flying into the forest. Gyuki's chakra doesn't exactly flood back, but Kurama judges that there's more of it than there was a moment ago. And with every rod pulled out, it bleeds back in, filling wounds, healing burns. Kurama feels his siblings' joy and relief echoing through their shared mindscape and closes his eyes with a faint smile.
"Hey, that was neat," Kisame says cheerfully, as a warping spiral spits himself, Madara, and Zetsu out in the rubble that used to be Akatsuki's main base. Looking around, he tries to pick out any signs of things that survived, including the squad that attacked them. The Uchiha hums, the sound all but vibrating with suppressed anger, and reaches up. The mask clicks against reinforced gloves as it comes off, and Kisame tries to be subtle about staring at the face revealed. Younger than he had expected, back when the man recruited him. Probably even younger than Kisame, though he hasn't had cause to ask. The scars are interesting, as are the distinctly different Sharingan eyes. "The Gato Mazo is destroyed," he says, apparently to Zetsu. "I noticed," the plant creature snaps back, bristling. His hands are clenched into fists, and there's fury and frustration in every line of his body. "There has to be a way to repair it. The plan can't go forward without it." Because Kisame is watching, he sees the way the Uchiha's eyes narrow, the faint flicker of derision that crosses his face. It's gone in an instant, though, deeply buried, and he bends down to pick up a shard of stone. There's white goo clinging to one side, and he studies it for a moment, then tosses it away. "We need to relocate," he says, glancing at Kisame, who raises his brows. "Between the fire and the chakra, I wouldn't be surprised if Kumo sent squads to investigate."
"We don't need to relocate. We need to fix this," Zetsu hisses, stepping right into the Uchiha's space. "Find a way! It has to be done! If you hadn't underestimated them to begin with, we wouldn't even have this problem." For a long, breathless moment, Kisame almost thinks Zetsu is going to get warped away permanently. Red-black eyes narrow, and that cold, heavy chakra gets even heavier. But then the Uchiha turns away, looking elsewhere, and says, "That redhead, he's the one who's been taking the Jinchuriki from the villages?"
"Yeah,"
Kisame says, figuring he may as well chip in. Orochimaru is their spymaster, but that doesn't mean Kisame allows himself to be left out of the loop.
"And Uzumaki, Konoha's saying he's their last Jinchuriki's brother or something."
The man turns sharply, staring at him for a long moment, and surprise looks strange on that controlled face. "Uzumaki Kushina had a brother?" he demands. The fact that he's an Uchiha means
that he's more than likely from Konoha, Kisame realizes belatedly. And given his age, he likely knew the other Uzumaki as well. Apparently, he says, offering up a toothy grin. This one's not into letting villages control him, or any other Jinchuriki, though. I felt him for Yagura, the Uchiha murmurs, almost to himself. And then, just now, he's got enough raw strength to be an Uzumaki. That could cause a problem if he decides to be a nuisance. He knows too much. Things he should have no idea about. When aren't the Uzumaki a nuisance? Zetsu demands sourly. If that pig-headed princess hadn't sealed the Kyuubi inside herself to begin with, this world wouldn't even have Jinchuriki. The scarred corner of the Uchiha's mouth tips up just a little, before he shakes his head and looks back at Kisame. There's no doubt he'll end up back in Konoha. Sarutobi is too crafty to allow him to keep wandering, especially with 9 Jinchuriki on his side. We are going to need to change our strategy if we still want to gather the Bijuu. Kisame considers this for a moment. It's not the best idea, but it will certainly be unexpected. And Pain's chakra rods should be able to hold a Jinchuriki indefinitely. He chuckles, already anticipating the fights to come, and swings Samehara over his shoulder. Got a plan, boss? He asks cheerfully, and is pleased to get another faint quarter smile. We go underground, he decides. No trace, no trail for the villages to follow. There are several bases we can use across the continent. Then, a distraction for Konoha, and we take Uzumaki. I have several questions only he can answer, and he'll prove good bait for the Jinchuriki, if they're truly fond of him.
What kind of distraction?
Kisame asks, interested. Those usually involve at least a little fighting, and it's been too peaceful lately. Well, not today, but for a long time before that, and it builds up. The Uchiha hesitates, but before he can answer, the sound of footsteps makes him turn, gaze snapping to the shattered end of one of the surface passages, and he slides his mask back into place. A bare second later, and a familiar figure steps delicately around fallen stones, and Orochimaru says slyly, If you don't object, Madara, I believe I may have a entertaining solution. Orochimaru's been with them for long enough that Kisame knows to be wary of anything that makes him look like that. Though, admittedly, the snake sanin looks quite a bit more ruffled than usual, and there are definite marks of a fight on him. The purple mask fixates on him for a long moment before the Uchiha tosses his arms over his chest. Enlighten us. That's clear displeasure on Orochimaru's face, the dislike of having to obey an order. Laughably easy to read in comparison to their leader's careful concealment of everything, and it makes Kisame chuckle to himself. Orochimaru ignores him pointedly, coming forward to join their little group. I've been studying the possibilities inherent in the Rinnegan, particularly its ability to revive the dead, he says grandly, as though this is news when Pain and Konan both watch him like hawks for any mention of tests or theories. He's not quite bold enough to badger them, but Kisame still wouldn't want to be in their shoes, though it's definitely amusing from his. When no one takes the bait, Orochimaru casts a dark look at the three of them and continues, as if he'd meant to all along. I also managed to acquire the notes on Senju Tobirama's Edo Tensei, though it is, unfortunately, incomplete and breaks down quickly. That's not news either. If Kisame is frank, it's probably one of the main reasons the man was recruited in the first place. He taps an idle finger against Samehara's hilt, waiting, and takes just a little bit of pleasure in the glare Orochimaru gives him. The scientist huffs, then says, as if they're trying his patience, The Rinne Tensei can revive the deceased, no matter how long dead. However, the chakra required to both rebuild the body and summon the soul is immense, and not even an Uzumaki would survive for long. Your point? The Uchiha asks, and Kisame is kind of awed at how he can project infinite patience and deadly irritation at the same time. Even Orochimaru seems to notice, because his eyes flick over the man, then slide away, and he finishes with slightly more haste than normal. I propose a combination of the two techniques, Edo Tensei to recreate the body and return to the soul, and Rinne Tensei to bind them in life. A control tag on the resurrected should be enough to keep them firmly on our side, and I can't think of a better way to distract Konoha than finding themselves set against their beloved lost ones. By the last word, he's smirking, sharp and hungry, as much for chaos as he is for knowledge, unless Kisame is reading him very wrong. It will only work on a handful, but that should be more than enough to put the village on edge and have them jumping at shadows. The Uchiha stares at him, still and silent, and then chuckles humorlessly. Uzumaki seemed close to the Kapinin, he says, darkly idle. Distract one, and it might work to unsettle the other. And I know exactly who to use.